Welcome to Roundhouse Roulette, a Walker, Texas Ranger podcast. Hello, I'm Evan Dalton, here with my brother Adam.
Hello.
And our bro from another Mo, Mr. Bob Leahy.
Hey, how's it going?
Fantastic. We've got a very special episode for our listeners. Joining us today from Ventura, California, that's like a different time zone, is former Walker, Texas Ranger, script supervisor, Mignon Monroe. From 1993 to 2000, she worked on nearly every bone-breaking episode of the series, of which we've pledged to recap and review here on the podcast. In addition to Walker, she's also supervised on fellow Texas television titans Prison Break and Friday Night Lights, as well as Chuck Norris projects The President's Man, Logan's War, and the fated 2005 Walker, Texas Ranger Trial by Fire reunion special. Notoriously, it ended with a cliffhanger that was intended to be resolved in future TV specials that sadly never materialized. In recent years, she's been digging into her archive of pictures and sharing an awesome behind-the-scenes look at her work on Walker, Texas Ranger set life on Instagram at WalkerTXRangerPics. That's Walker, Texas Ranger Pics. Well, Mignon, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. You are awesome. I love listening to you guys. It's going to be great. I love this.
It's always startling when we hear any feedback whatsoever. So hearing it from someone who's actually associated with the show is shocking, and it makes us happy.
Well, it should. Seriously, you guys are having fun. It should be that way.
We try to, but Adam likes cracking the whip a lot. So
someone's got to keep it on the rails here, Evan. So if you could hurry up, it'd be great.
Okay. Well, we're going to get into some stuff, but before we do that, we've got a little something special here. So even though he may roll his eyes at the craft beer scene, CD actually heard that Mignon was partial to a particular pale ale from Made West Brewing Company, and he was kind enough to hook us all up with said beverage.
As he does.
It's like magic.
Yeah.
As described in his freshly printed craft beer menu, this heavy-hopped West Coast Pale Ale is bursting with a bright citrus and fruity hop complexity. It has just enough malt presence to allow the loads of hops to shine through, like California sunshine. This crisp, hop-forward beer has a dry, refreshing finish. Now, legend has this, you have this on tap in your living room?
That's true.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got your priorities in check there.
So, you're telling me you guys don't have kegerators?
No, unfortunately not. Yeah.
What do you put in that corner of your living room? Like, it's a whole section, right?
There is a lot of space, and now I'm rethinking that. Yeah.
Well, what do you say, guys? Shall we hop to it?
Ooh. Okay, yeah.
Cheers.
Salute.
Cheers.
Enjoy.
Okay. Yeah. That's awesome.
It's so crisp. It's so bright. It's kind of almost like watching a Walker, Texas Ranger. Like you don't necessarily see it coming.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that boot appears and you'll never forget it.
And then it's just refreshing.
You're like, I'm going to watch that again.
Exactly.
Yeah, and cleanses the palate like a nice roundhouse kick. Mm.
Thank you. That's what I thought too.
It's pretty good. Bob, what is on your glass?
Oh, this is a Christmas gift from a friend of mine. But if you could see it, it's a Die Hard themed.
Oh, wow.
So you have Hans Gruber?
No, there's no Gruber. It's just this is, you know, that guy. What's his name?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's okay. The cokehead. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Well, it's a little off brand here for the Walker cast. I'm a little offended that it's not a Chuck Norris pint glass, but
I figured it was better than nothing at all. It's an action movie. Come on. And who was in Die Hard?
Clarence Gilliard.
Yeah come on now.
All right. Okay.
So it's close.
That's our Christmas movie every year, seriously.
Awesome. Yeah, I watched it this Christmas, and it did not disappoint. It's been a while since I've seen it, and I was like, this is actually really good. I don't know why I was surprised by that, but...
Oh, it holds up. It holds up.
It's a good kind of surprise.
My glass is about as far away from Walker as you can get. It is from a place in Birch Harbor, Maine, called the Pickled Wrinkle.
Yeah.
But, you know, weird. It's possible that Walker, at one point in his life, was a lobsterman. I could see that.
I don't know. We'll have to see. He did work on an oil rig. Yeah. You know.
Most of it was like Texas, Oklahoma stuff that he did. It was like... Mm.
Yeah,
I don't know
if he made it up to Maine. It
occasionally went to Vietnam. Maybe he was a lobsterman in Vietnam.
Although when you said like he did everybody's job better than they did, I was like, I think we have not stopped saying that. So we're like, everything we see, we're like, Chuck would do that better.
Sorry. Yeah, I mean, he substitute teaches better than pretty much anyone working there.
I will say my wife was a teacher. She watched that episode and she learned so much more than she'd ever learned in school. So
yeah, she actually quit, right?
She gave up.
Yeah, she couldn't get any of her kids to take the AP test. So just give up now, you know?
Yeah, just dangle a free karate class and they'll be there. They'll sign up.
They'll sign up. Well, who wouldn't want to do a free karate class?
Like? No kidding. Do you guys go to this brewery a lot? Is this your hang before the end times?
Yeah, before the end of times, before we were just stuck looking at each other here in the house.
Yeah.
No, that's where we go. There's some really great breweries here in Ventura for sure, but that's our standby. They need us.
Yeah, it sounds like you're keeping them in business. You guys get a new keg every other day. Is that pretty much how it works out?
A sixel, well, we do 2 sixels in it, and unfortunately, it's always the same beer. Like, we don't even trade off. We've got 2 handles, but it's just the same beer. Like, I don't know. Well, like
easier to fill.
Right.
You know, you're keeping them afloat, and they're returning the favor in keeping you guys afloat.
It's the only way I've been able to deal with this, seriously. I think... Breakfast beer has been a savior. I don't know if you guys know about breakfast beer, but I strongly recommend it.
I've dabbled.
I heard something the other day that Americans last year consumed, I think it was like 18% more alcohol than the year prior. I think they're blaming COVID. I would blame podcasts because I'm drinking more beer because of the podcast. So I think probably podcasts.
I say bless their hearts. Like, just like.
Most definitely. Well, I guess if you want to tell us a little bit about your background and how you got started in the crazy television biz.
Honestly, like, I've been thinking about that a lot. I think I just got divorced, moved from Oklahoma, and landed in Dallas. And I was like, well, now what do you do? This is cool. You got a 4-year-old. I had one dress that was going to be my interview dress. It was a suit sort of a thing. And then I just started getting jobs as craft service on commercials, which craft services, you just get there early and you feed everybody. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's kind of cool. I'm kind of like having a party all day. Just come in with the burritos and the donuts and the coffee. And so I started doing that. And then I got called over to do Walker. I didn't do the first season of Walker, that canon season. What were they, like 9 episodes?
Yeah, there were only maybe like 4 or 5, right? And then the first one was a long pilot.
Yeah, so that first season was really just sort of like a shit show, I think. And everybody was really not happy with it. But then it came back. And whoever they had hired to do craft service first was a failure. They had a run-in with the Teamsters, which was like, just feed your Teamster. He's fine. He's going to start your car if you need it. Like, just let him have the cheese plate. And so I started doing that, and I got really bored because, like, how many pastries can you put out every day? Like, seriously. So I conned Eric Norris, the second unit director, into letting me come out and, as I called it, script supervise. And he said, sure, but just stay out of our way.
Okay.
It's like, okay. So I started doing that and just going out and seeing all the car crashes and all the explosions and just writing down whatever I wanted to write and making mistakes. And then people along the way be like, you know, Mignon, if you kind of did it this way, it'd make more sense. Mm-hmm. And it just was a really good fit for me. It's a super hard job. You're on 7 days, like there's no stopping. You're just doing script after script after script. Well, she got totally burnt out, which is super easy to do. And that's when I came in and started doing it full time. I'd been taking over, and fortunately, one of the rotating directors, Michael Priest, had been a script supervisor on like Mutiny of the Bounty. And his mother actually started the guild in LA. And so he kind of took me under and said, come on, come with me. I'll show you what to do. You're going to sit by me anyway, so I might as well talk to you. And that's when I just started doing it every day. And it was fantastic. It was the best job I'd ever had in my whole life. Seriously.
Awesome. So you were working craft service, and Eric Norris, he's Chuck Norris's son, right?
Yeah, one of his sons. Yeah.
And he directed a bunch of episodes, right?
Hey, yes, your footage that you guys have as your extra bits.
Yeah.
Score.
Kind of an interesting interview, and you could kind of see the dynamic between him and Chuck, father and son, and his son directing him, that kind of thing, and them being like, yeah, you know, I wish there were more car crashes in this one. Oh. Said something like that, right?
Yeah. That was a good interview. I was in that whole thing because that is part of my day.
So was that a hospital room? Is that a set or is that an actual hospital?
That was a set. Now, we did have some hospitals that we shot in that were abandoned, but they just were super hard. And it was so nice if you could just be on the stage because there was all your facilities already there. So, yeah, but that was on the stage.
That's our favorite purple hospital.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, and that girl got resurrected. So this is the episode, The Neighborhood, which I think is the 100th episode. And there's a girl who's injured in a drive-by shooting, and she's in the hospital with her grandma, and they start praying, and then a blinding light enters the room, and she convulses back to life. So you were sitting by the camera as this went down. Is that what you're saying?
That's true.
Did you instruct her to remove the ventilator from herself?
No, that was totally 100% the director, who was Eric, the camera operator, and also the first AD. They were all three very direct in on what that little girl needed to do. And it was cold on that stage that day. Like, some of those people were troopers who did that. Like, they're unsung heroes.
Mm. So did they keep the hospital at like -0 or?
You're just in a gigantic warehouse. Like the stages at Las Colinas, it's just a gigantic hangar with this big room. So you can turn on the heat, of course, but that makes sound. So the sound guys are going to be like, that's got to go off, right? Yeah. And then like, it just goes long enough that it's just like the temperature starts going down. And you're like, yeah, that's going to be cold.
Gotcha. It seems like it's kind of a family affair, right? Because he had his brother, his son working on it. They're always pulling in a lot of the same extras for different characters all the time. And you worked on a number of projects with them, so even outside of Walker. So it seems like they kept working with the same people. How was the vibe on that?
The crew is an amazing crew. That whole Dallas set of people from the Dallas Film Commission, they're still my family. It's still people that I have in contact with. We all talk to each other. Sheree is still friends with me. Like, that's an incredible relationship that still has gone on. Like, I still know Judson. I still know Eric. How do you break that up? Like, we were all such little kids, and we were all putting this together. And just on the set, like 14 hours for 5 days in a row. And then you come back on Monday and do that whole week all over. Like,
and those are long seasons, too. Like, nowadays, all the TV shows are like, yeah, we're just going to do 8 episodes.
Oh, yeah. There's no commitment. You think about the commitment of even, like, 22 episodes. Like, sheesh.
Wow.
And we were all just technicians. Like, we didn't know about story. We knew, like, it's going to be a great explosion. We weren't privy to story.
So, as far as IMDb, they don't have you credited for all the stuff you did, huh?
I don't think so. And, you know, my husband kind of had to be up his about that because he was like, you need to make sure that everybody knows. And I was like, I really don't care. Like, it's fine.
Well, this is right now. You tell everybody right now. I mean, we've got about 10 listeners, so.
That's awesome. All 10 now. Woohoo! I'm the one. That was me.
We're pretty sure 8 of them are in Dubai, so.
Syndication, man. Walker's got a syndication chokehold, really.
Oh, it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. You know, we've tried to, like, pitch a couple of projects, just, like, because Chuck Norris is just, it's such a, like, solid IP. Like, he's just an icon. And, like, if Mike Tyson could go and make a cartoon about him and a chicken or whatever that was,
yeah.
like, well, why not really just, like, exploit what you've built? He's just, like, unstoppable. Why would you not use that?
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what Walker was. It literally is that. It's Chuck Norris, a TV show. Done.
Yeah. Oh, dang. I mean, there's just people who, like, on Saturday nights, who just like you, were like, no, this is where we're going to be. Because where else can you see a water truck explode? Yeah. I know.
Yeah. I thought I've seen, like, all the ways you can use a helicopter, but I was wrong.
No. And that helicopter pilot is an amazing human being. I will tell you, Jim Helms is absolutely an amazing human.
So he was the sort of the stunt copter guy for the majority of the series?
Yeah, totally. He's the only one that flew that beast like that. He's like, he was, he was impeccable. Like, there's only one other person I'd get into a helicopter with, and that was Ross Perot's pilot. But that's it. Like, those two people, and I'm out.
Let's get into script supervising. So for people out there, I don't know very much about it at all. It's not something I really thought about. What does a script supervisor do?
Basically, it's the main hub of everything. So I always have the script on me. I'm always by the director. I always know how many shots we're going to get, how we're going to cover something. And then I just take care of, like, I know. I'm basically sort of like the answer to the puzzle piece. When the editors get all these strips of film and everything, like, this is how it goes together. This is where this goes. This is the close-up. This is the master. This is with the doubles. Just notating every take. What went wrong? Where did it go wrong? Why did it go wrong?
Or if you guys ad-lib something, or you're like, oh, you know what? We're going to do this differently. You'll take, like, a note of that on the script. Yeah. Is that what happens?
Yeah, no, totally. And that's why, like, here I am. I just have my script books, and it's just pages and pages. And sometimes you'll have, like, 3 and 4 pages of notes on top of every page. Mm. I was going to try to find a good fight, but then I ran out of time.
Yeah, and you've got some good shots of this on your Instagram. So for people listening, you want to check it out and see what an actual noted up page of a script after actuality came face first to the script.
Yeah, and I really want to put more of the pages. I just get really bored when I look at them. I'm like, oh, what the fuck? That's so boring.
Well, I mean, if you listen to our Christmas episode, Bob got me the Rainbow Warrior script. But we were noting how, you know, there were a lot of changes from that version of the script, whatever version it was, between that and the final product. So were those changes happening in real time, or were they happening prior to that?
In real time, and usually, like, Chuck's in his car getting driven, and then we'll get some notice. We'll be like, okay, everybody be ready. There's going to be some changes because they're going through it. You know, he's with his dialect coach. And so then she shows up, and then she's like, okay, we got to let all the actors know, but this is how this scene's going down now. And we're like, all right. And then, like, we'll be going through, and you're like, dude, you totally rocked this out. And then he'll go, line. I'm like,
Well, I'll be damned.
How would I know? I don't know.
Yeah. You changed everything.
This isn't what I read last night. My whole credo was less is more. And I'd be like, you know what? Maybe you just shouldn't say anything. Like, why do you want to say all that? Like, wouldn't you just want to say just a little bit instead of, like, a lot? Like,
yeah, let's just get another pensive shot of Walker for the camera, please.
Well, look, you get a little push-pull to that.
Were you in charge of continuity as well?
Of course, continuity. Of course, screen direction. Of course, like, just making sure we have all the pieces to any given scene. tracking any pieces of wild lines or pickup shots or insert shots, whatever. My book was the key to all of that. And I just wrote everything down, right? You just write it down, like, you don't have to worry.
And then the editors are like, I can't read this.
No. That's the secret.
It's whatever you want it to be, man.
You just write it a whole bunch. I used to have all the scripts, but one move later, didn't check the garage, and the whole box is gone. So, yeah, that's pretty brutal, but...
Maybe that's what Bob bought for me.
Yeah, it could be.
Could have come from that stash.
Was it lined?
No. No, it was, I think as CD calls it, a facsimile.
Facsimile. Yeah. I always made sure they came with my name on the top.
Oh, okay, yeah. So.
I don't want to say this is my work or anything.
Right. Well, so you did write all that. That's what you're saying. Excellent. Yeah.
It's your responsibility.
Yeah, that's a lot of pages for 44 minutes.
And I used to have call sheets, and I don't even think I have an old call sheet anymore. Such sadness.
So do you think with all of the shots that you guys did that each episode could probably run for like an hour and a half instead of, you know, 44 minutes or so?
No, because you have to cut it that tight. You would not want to see all that. You don't really need those long, lingering, slow moments. Like, I had an argument with a director once because he did this super long, like, crane shot down and to the car, and it was coming up to the, and it was like a good minute and a half, right? Because he kind of had a script that was, like, really a little too short.
A little padding.
I gave it 7 seconds. Okay. He was not happy with that because he was like, no, I should get more screen time. I was like,
then you're cutting out dialogue, right? Or like important story stuff so that we can have this establishing shot.
Oh my gosh. Well, you had the crane shot. You got to use it.
Gotta use it.
But like at the end of the neighborhood episode, they have a ridiculous crane shot in that one, swooping down on the girl singing, I think, at the end.
God, I have to go back and watch these. Yeah. Seriously. Like,
but yeah, there were some pretty epic crane shots in that one. And then I think in the episode Skyjacked, which might have been before you started, was in the first season, they had the convict who takes over a plane. And then he escapes via, like, hiding as someone who's injured. And they, what are those things called, Bob?
They go, I think, up and they're down. Called, well, it might be the brand name, but it's like a skyjack is what they call it. But it's like a, or like a cherry picker or something. But yeah, it just goes up.
Like they literally eat like 10 minutes of showing that thing go up and down.
It felt like 10 minutes, yeah. And it wasn't even really anything interesting. It was just slowly going up.
That's why the episode's called Skyjacked.
I so want to watch that now. Yeah. Like, this is bad. This is really bad.
It did remind me that it actually made me forget what happened to the bad guy. And then when he turns up that he was faking that.
It's a really big surprise, right?
Yeah. I think that maybe it was in there to make you forget about where the bad guy was. But because that was like 10 minutes.
I think what we're getting at is that Mignon was not working as script supervisor at that point because those shots should have taken a lot less time. You know.
Probably would have reeled it in a little bit.
Yeah, more explosions, less weird stuff.
That is just the cherry, right? Like, seriously. We had one stunt guy that, like, we just called a mailbox because if there was a mailbox on the side of the road, he was going to hit it for sure.
That was his shtick as a stunt driver?
Yeah, so we'd be like, way to go, mailbox. He'd be like, I'm not going to hit any mailboxes.
That's awesome.
No, we were just really young and just having fun with, like, fast cars and, you know, just, like, being on just, like, raceways and speedways. And then all of a sudden, you're just right in the middle and cars are coming towards you. You're like, well, I guess I'm just going to stand here. Yeah.
This is normal.
This is just a regular job. This is just my day. What?
So of all the explosions, could you pick a favorite?
The one that went off too soon?
Okay.
The one that went off before the cameras were rolling, that was pretty good.
So what happened there?
We have no idea. Somebody was just really excited and They thought they heard the first AD say go, and we were all just standing around talking. There was not even a single camera in place. Like, nobody, nobody got it. Like, nobody.
It was an expensive mishap, I bet.
Insane. We kind of want to ask you about some of the ones we know you were worked on that we've done.
Oh, God, it's so weird because, like, I remember them when I see them, but they were 7 days. So we would do 2 days on the stage, 5 days on the road. And so, like, your seventh day would sometimes be in the middle of the week. It really was just a technical job. Like, it was just like, what do we have to do today? Well, we're getting these three guys talking. We're moving that car over there, and we're doing a big explosion at the end. And you're like, bring it on. And it's so funny because, like, I would try to watch it every Saturday night, but, like, that was the only TV I was watching. I'd get home at 9 o'clock, have to do, like, an hour's of, like, reading for the next day, making sure I knew what pages we were shooting, and then be at work by, like, 6 o'clock in the morning. I didn't know who any of these people were. I was like, sure, I don't really care, but do you think you know what you're going to do? Like, what are you doing with that thing in your hand right now? Like, is this going to be a thing? Or they'd come in and they want to have a toothpick. I'd be like, I'd really rather you didn't do that.
Yeah. Artistic choice here. It's a little much.
It's a method acting thing. I need it.
Exactly. I'd be like, okay, did you discuss this with anybody? Like, because just watching you, like, rehearse, I'm noticing it's moving around a lot. Like, oh, okay, well, I won't do that. That lasts about 5 seconds.
Oh, yeah. Chuck really doesn't like toothpicks, and you don't want him to tell you.
No, he doesn't. Well, because, like, you're going to end up punching them, and... you don't want a toothpick in your hand, so you got to really make sure your bad guys are, like, keeping up with their grooming. One bad pimple on somebody, like, I don't know, do you really want to hit them in the face?
That could also be an explosion
of a different sort.
we had one really funny thing there. It was actually the guy who was beating his wife, right, that episode. And he was yelling at her, and in one of the takes, his dentures flew out.
Oh, no.
Do you know how hard it is to take that serious after that's happened?
Oh, man.
Why didn't you keep that one in?
I mean, that would have been a good character development trait right there. I mean, this guy's so methed out, he doesn't even have teeth. Oh, my God. That was the one with Mila Kunis, right?
Is it really? Oh, God.
What was the name of that episode?
Was that the teen camp one?
Yeah, they got a ranger teen camp. Yeah.
Oh, my God. So watching some of your clips, I'm like, oh, my God, I remember that day. Yeah. I can tell you, like, I was an extra, so I had to run away from the gas station before it exploded. I'm like, there I am. Yeah.
You're like, how close do you want me to be before when you blow this up?
Eric's just like, just run. Like, yeah. I'm good at that. I can do that. I don't know.
Oh, man. That was a pretty epic episode. But yeah, that guy was pretty grisly, that wife beater.
Sometimes it's really like, those aren't fun to do.
No.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
Telling poor little Lucas he had AIDS, like, it was really hard. Like, we had to keep the set quiet. Like, it was it was hard.
Yeah, that's the juxtaposition of the show, which I guess I want to ask you about, is it deals with some really serious topics like domestic violence and telling Haley Joel Osment he has AIDS, you know, and then at the same time, it's all about the action, too. So juggling those two things is kind of one of the show's hallmarks, right?
I totally agree.
So you were there, though, when Walker told Haley Joel Osment he had AIDS.
Yes,
that's true. Can you kind of break that down for us?
It was a very stressful day. It was very stressful, and Haley's dad was there, and he was a pretty intense human being. I think anybody who has a kid that's doing that and allowing them to do that, you have to be pretty intense. And so it was pretty tightly run that day. And and Chuck really wanted to come off as sincere. And, like, I think that's, he's like, I don't want to look stupid. Right? Like,
yeah.
And so it meant a lot to him, which was always fascinating. And it was always interesting to see, because he would honestly bring a lot of himself. Like, he'd be really nervous and he'd be really thinking about what he had to say. Like, it was...
The show, because of him, has an honesty to it, because you do believe that he's coming from a pure place when he's dealing with this, even though sometimes it might not be in the best way in juxtaposition to him violently kicking the crap out of somebody in an awesome fashion. But he's somehow able to feel his earnestness in it, you know?
There's something about just him being sort of clumsy with it almost, and not that he was clumsy, but just sort of like unsure. And he would get this breathiness that I think he really didn't enjoy, but you could feel that he was really working. And he was that moment. He was that moment, 100%.
Being that earnest in those scenes, he doesn't necessarily say a lot or emote a lot, but you're able to still feel that. So the other actors around him generally seem to have to amp up their performance a little bit more, I think.
That could be really true. I don't know. You know, that'd be a good conversation to have with somebody who did like really come up against him. Because like I know Marshall Teague was so loyal, like, and he's in so many of those episodes. Always the bad guy, always ready to take a punch, man. And he was the nicest guy ever, like super nice.
I've noticed particularly in some of the earlier seasons that sort of the recurrence of certain props that are used. Most importantly, what seems to be the single Uzi. Were there other props that were reused on multiple occasions and that maybe built up some sort of reverence among the crew?
Oh, I'm sure. I don't know. I'd have to go back and talk to Big Bob. He ran the props. Michael Tomasetti did all the guns, whether or not they had like bullets and or holes in them to be fired. I have no idea. We always came with a safety meeting before, so.
Okay. But there wasn't like a prop chest of guns. You know, they're like, okay, what are we doing today?
Well, yes, there was. It was gigantic. And Big Bob would be like, yeah, it's over there in the top drawer over there. Just go get it.
Take your pick.
But what are you doing today? All right. Okay. Well, your stuff is in that second drawer over there. So go get it.
Oh, awesome. And he's like, and you're going to want to put some gaff tape over the handle because, you know.
It's ridiculous. They were awesome, though. Come on.
No, I mean, that's great. But we never see more than one Uzi. We're waiting for that moment.
That's really funny. And I never actually thought about it that way.
I don't understand why you wouldn't think about that, but...
I was too busy looking at the guns on side of his head. Like, every time Chuck sits down at his desk and he's in front of the gun case, all the guns are like this in his head. Like, once you see it, you can't unsee it. You're like, why would you do that? You're like, I don't know.
Oh, you're talking about in his
office.
That was on the soundstage too, I'm assuming.
Yeah, that was a permanent set for sure.
Why not? You know, just have a bunch of guns pointed at you.
Why not?
And just to bring things back to Marshall Teague, who you mentioned earlier about his willingness to take a punch, he's actually the guy in Roadhouse who has his throat ripped out by Patrick Swayze as well. So,
that's right.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's Roadhouse. He's willing to take a punch from anybody. So.
Cheers. Roadhouse.
Adam and I like Roadhouse because our last name is Dalton. So.
Oh, see, that's funny. I never put that together. I like the Family Guy where he goes around and he goes, Roadhouse.
I will say, Mignon, that your setup there is, more of a Nerd Palace maybe than Adam's even at this point.
Wait, is this a competition here?
Maybe. It seems to be.
You want to go down? You want to throw down? I'm ready.
I don't think Adam's got a Han Solo and Carbonite, so.
Wait,
Pretty cool.
Damn.
Oh, yeah, nice.
What?
Comparing Zoom sets.
Now I'm back in my husband's office because he rocks his shit out like nobody's business.
Yeah.
I don't even know what else back there right now. I think
what else we see is incriminating.
There's the TMNT poster.
Nice.
Yeah.
Those Olympus Heights, those are all comic books that he did.
Oh, awesome.
They're pretty cool, honestly. And then he directed the TMNT 2007. And then that is just a wall sticker on the door. So
it's not the actual Harrison Ford back there?
No, the actual prop, the original.
It'd be cooler if it was.
Yeah. I mean, I would keep him locked up.
I would be back here more often.
Harrison Ford is not an accomplished stunt pilot like your friend with the helicopter.
But Jim would fly for him, so it'd be fine. Jim knows how to put on crazy wigs. He's good with that.
So the helicopter guy, Jim, he had to pretty much dress up, right?
Well, yeah, he wants to be somebody different every time, too. And then sometimes he is a bad guy and he has to take a punch or whatever. Like, you know, okay. You don't want to keep recognizing the same pilot because you're like, why does every bad guy have the same helicopter pilot?
It's like a union thing.
We have noticed they usually have the same helicopters.
Oh, my gosh.
It's the Dallas metro area helicopter Uber service.
Yeah, that's right. You know what? You just can lift up anything, whatever.
Yeah.
You're a drug lord. You know, you need to get somewhere fast.
You've got Uber it a helicopter. Right there. Yeah.
Who was the person in charge of, we haven't gone helicopter to a whaling boat yet, you know? Who comes up with that stuff?
It is all on the creative side. I'm sure that like Eric was at times going like, we haven't done this or that's a new thing that I've seen that I know we can do. Eric's an amazing human being. I say that about everything, but he is honestly, he's super smart. He understands how to cut things together. He just like cut his teeth on Walker learning. My husband, I met him on a movie, Dylan Dog, when he was shooting it. That's how we met. But Eric was actually his stunt coordinator. And so Eric was the one who recommended that I come in and script supervise for Kevin.
Oh, awesome.
But Kevin was like, because he comes from CG and animation, he's like, here's the first time that he talks about storyboards and how to cut these fights exactly like animation, exactly like CG. I know exactly what he's talking about. It's not all of this loose sort of like sweeping talk about just like visually, but it's like, actually, we're going to start up here because this is where the most impact is. We're going to cut down here. It's going to look really great. Like Eric totally has it down. He's tops.
So you're still in touch with Eric?
Yeah, I'll hear from him. I've seen his kids grow up. Like I was watching today because you guys forced me into watching things. So I watched.
I'm sorry, we made you watch Walker, Texas Ranger.
God damn it, I should have. Shit. All I watched was behind the scenes and I was like, stupid me, going like, oh, there I am. Oh, there I am.
No, I was surprised to find that. What's it called? The Texas Film Archive?
Yeah, that was crazy. And I do remember the day they were there and they just shot stuff like whatever. Like it was bizarre. And then the stuff that I watched today, I'll see if I can't find it again. If you guys don't have the link for it, but it's all from the first two seasons because I was only doing second unit because I found myself in that one for sure too, as I do. And it's was behind the scenes. It was really interesting because that was really true to how it worked.
Especially when they're filming an explosion and they're like, well, we're only going to do this once.
So
let's get the stunt double in here of Chuck so we can get him running in two different directions and double our footage and coverage. And the guy interviewing Chuck is kind of like, you're actually doing this? He's like, yeah.
Until you see him jumping out of the airplane and it's never actually Chuck. It's only Kenny, but that's okay. Yeah. He did all the stuff on the table with the fan blowing up, I promise.
Oh my gosh. Or the hot air balloon thing. I can't wait to get to that one. It's been a while since I've seen that, but I think that's got to be one of the most insane things.
Kenny was absolutely fearless. He had a huge belief in God, and he was absolutely fearless, and he just was like, I'll do it. He was Chuck's. Anything that had to do with running or driving the car or pulling a gun. He had another double, Chip Wright, who did all the fighting stuff. Mm-hmm. And Chip's a little shorter, a little stockier. So there's a fun drinking game I used to do. It's called the Chip Chuck game. And you go to the fight and you have to call who it is, Chip or Chuck, at any given time. And then you just drink while you do it because that helps out. Right. That's
you get
the
better
rules.
As the game goes on.
Yeah.
And you may never know the answer, but
you don't need to. Just keep the rules simple.
Trust me, it gets better.
Trust me, it gets a lot better.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So I mean, you just kinda ruined it for me. I always thought Chuck jumped off that hot air balloon onto the other hot air balloon. I mean, but
bless your heart. I'm really sorry.
Yeah, it's totally ruined for me now.
It's like Santa's gone now.
Wait, what?
Oh. Fun? I need another beer.
I've just broken some bad news.
This isn't going great.
Hot air balloon thing always reminded me of like those parachutes in grade school or something. You had the big parachute and the air coming down. And
when he lands on it, it looks like that. Yeah. But
it's like a really
brilliant. No, but he really did that. He really jumped out and landed on top of a balloon. Like, I know he had on his parachute, like, whatever. It was still going to be safe.
But he did it, yeah.
But he really jumped out of a perfectly good airplane onto the top of a balloon. Like, why would you do that?
It's got to be one of the best opening, because there's like a car chase opening, and then the bad guy somehow gets away into a field, and there's like some elderly couple going on like a romantic hot air balloon ride, and this guy with a gun takes it over, takes it up, and then Walker pulls up just behind him and commandeers the other hot air balloon, and is like, can you get higher than him? Who says that? Well, the guy's firing bullets down at you. But somehow, I mean, Walker does it, and then he literally jumps from a hot air balloon onto another.
Yeah, that's right. He did. He jumped off of another balloon. That's awesome. Yeah. I would get into a hot air balloon with Walker, not Chuck, but with Walker manning it, because I know he'd do it better than anybody else. Right. But
yeah, yeah. But CD also blows a lot of hot air, so you know.
CD, you know, he likes some of the newfangled stuff, right? Like, that's cool. But absolutely zero, no funny cigarettes. We don't abide by that around here. It's just like, get out.
Yeah, hippies use the back door.
Yeah, I don't care if it's legal. Not in CD's Bar and Grill. That's real.
You guys had a set for CDs, right? And then it's also a real bar, right?
Correct, yeah. And the inside of CD changed like a couple of times. It was on its third gyration, sort of.
They had like a band in there one time, and I was like, I didn't know they had a band in there. And then
Band was great. Like, we had beers afterwards, and they stayed and played, so it was fun.
Like, they actually serve beer at CDs.
I don't think they even really show people with beers a lot of the time. It's usually like, here's an iced tea.
We saw him order a beer in the first episode we did in The Guardians, but he just orders the beer and leaves it at the bar. He doesn't drink from it or anything.
That's Canon production. See, that's the difference. Once you went to CBS and Amadea, you just didn't fool around with beer like that.
Yeah, you wouldn't leave it behind.
I just always assume that a Texas Ranger is always on the clock.
Give us like your craziest Walker story here. Let's hear it.
I told my husband I wasn't going to actually tell this story, but it's actually kind of funny. So Judson and Knee Peoples are getting in the car, and the camera's looking at the building. It's just honestly just a drive up from behind camera and stop, and they get out and go in. Like, it's less than 7 seconds, even in reality. Like, right? It's just supposed to go that fast. And so the question came was like, well, do we wear seatbelts on this? I'm like, well, we have to. Standards and practices, like, you should always wear your seatbelt. Yeah. They're like, well, you're not going to see it because it's behind. I'm like, I would feel better. Like, I think that's just true. So they pull up. Somebody forgets to stop. They kind of run into the building.
Whoops.
Just a little bit. It wasn't bad, but it was just really unexpected.
So who was it? Was it Neo or Judson who drove into the building?
We'll have to discuss that at a later date. I'll discuss this record with them. Is this my shameless plug to get back on? Like, is that I just like bribe you guys with information?
Yeah, and I mean, we're gonna need to know that. And also, I mean, you know, was it because Judson didn't want to mess up his hair, his frosted tips, with the seatbelt that he didn't want to put it on? These are the questions I want to know.
I know, right? I know.
There's an inside joke in one of the episodes where they joke about who's going to be driving.
Yeah, maybe our answer is right there.
It literally was a joke with no payoff in the show that was kind of like, I'm driving this time because of what you did last time.
Right.
Was that in reference to that?
I don't know. Now I've made myself curious.
Safe House is the episode, yeah.
I have to binge them now. Like, what? I binged other things. Why wouldn't I do this?
I mean, yeah, binging Walker's a lot safer, but always do it with a friend.
Always do it with a friend.
Yeah.
I will say that I have yet to listen to an episode of Roundhouse Roulette. So if you feel weird about watching Walker, you know, that's okay.
Yeah. I listened to a few.
You also worked on the last Word on Walker, right? The reunion special. How did that come about?
That's so weird because I don't even really think that it was separate from our regular. I just don't remember that being a big break. Like, we just came and did it.
I think from what I was reading, and I've been reading way too much about Walker this year. I think the way it happened was, like, they want to end the show on top, so they did a finale and everything, because the ratings were still good, and the plan was to come back and just do a series of TV movies periodically, and for whatever reason, it took a few years to get that first one on, and then after that one happened, it just didn't happen again.
That's so weird, because once again, it was just in the middle of my life, and I just,
You were just cashing that paycheck.
I was.
You really cared about Walker.
I honestly, and I will tell you, like, it's so weird. I didn't think about story or character or all those concepts until I met my husband. I was the script supervisor, and we would argue about technical things, and he'd be like, it just doesn't matter. This is why. I'll be like, what the fuck are you talking about? And so during the last 10 years, as we have been together and created IPs ourselves and gone on and pitched projects and...
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, I never thought about that with Walker. Like, why didn't that cross my mind? Like, nobody talked about that on set. Like, it just wasn't a conversation there.
The priority was ass kicking.
I thought so.
Yeah, yeah.
Nowadays, you can't really have a show that each episode stands free on its own, because so many shows are sort of dependent upon what happened in the prior episode or in the prior season. Whereas really the sort of the largest arc within Walker is Walker and Alex getting married, which takes, you know, like 8 seasons to happen.
Yeah. But you also really see Trivette change. He starts out almost as if like he's in Die Hard. He's quirky. He's kind of fast talking. He's super technical. He's got all this stuff, right? Like he's like, no, we'll just outsmart him, right? Like he's totally about the smarts.
He's watch
him. Yeah, and then you watch him, and like now he becomes more thoughtful, and he becomes really technically, like he really thinks about things, and he problem solves like a scientist. Like, like nobody gives him credit for like how far he came in the show.
Yeah, well, here's maybe a little bit of how far he came, because usually they end in a freeze frame with like a joke at his expense at the beginning, right? But at the end, they're giving Gage and Sydney a little bit of hard time, and we're like, oh man, they actually were sharing the
taking the load.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, and then Trivette got to get into it, and now he gets to kind of like be the old cool guy that's like making fun of the new young up and comers, right? Oh, you guys are so cute. You know, give him a soft noogie on the head.
Yeah. What was the intention with Gage and Sydney? They're strictly platonic partners?
Yeah, completely. I don't know why they, because once again, I wasn't privy to those conversations, but I think it really was just like it's tiring. I can't imagine like what kind of toll it takes on just like a human being, like seriously. And Chuck really worked hard. Like we think we worked hard just being technical on there. Like he's really got a lot on the line. He's got his reputation. He's got how he looks. He's got what he says. Like
even while doing Walker, he's doing movies. He's got his gym, right? What was it called? The
Total Gym.
Yeah.
Now, confirmation, did he actually have a Total Gym on set?
Oh, we had a ton of Total Gyms on this set. Like, I mean, he'd be like people would come on the show and he'd be like, Hulk, you want a Total Gym? I'll have one sent to your house. Like, whatever. Like, I think even Ernest Borgnine bought a Total Gym. I'm not sure.
Wow. He's like Oprah, just everyone on the set, just you get a Total Gym. You get a Total Gym.
Technicians, no.
Oh, right. Yeah, no, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, so we have not seen the reunion special because it's only available if you buy the whole DVD set just to get this cliffhanger of an ending that's not resolved.
That's so unfair.
Yeah, so tell us what happens. What happens here after, you know, when you guys were planning to come back and film the sequel to this, what were you going to do?
Me personally, probably write down a bunch of notes and
yeah. But when you were like, you know what, I think Alex is going to come back to life, and she's actually going to be promoted finally to district attorney.
Well, look, she is a female, and like I do like the way you talk about the possibilities. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And just for me to talk about the possibility, look, I'm just a girl. What do I really know? Like, I'm just going to make up some stuff.
That Alex was going to break the glass ceiling? That's what was going to happen on this.
Yeah, like, that's what you really wanted, right? But the crushing blow would be that she dies before she reaches her goal. Right?
Ah, that's true. That's the bitter irony of Walker.
Right? Like, she really worked hard, and she was always there for him, and, like, she gave herself just selflessly. There's a price to be paid for that. Like, do you really get your cake and eat it too?
Not in the Walker episode.
Thank you for that.
Oh, man. Well, so that really spells things out here, guys. So pretty much what we're hearing is that, you know, there were a lot of plans in the works for a sequel to this reunion special. And we're not going to get any information about it here.
No, I honestly thought about, like, I know one of the writers really well, and I still talk to him all the time. And, you know, look, I probably could have done some of the legwork and, like, talked to him. But I was like, you know what? How am I going to get back on if I give these guys everything they want, like, in one big...
True.
Like, that just didn't seem fair. I was like, right. I've got a lot invested in this.
Yeah, yeah.
No, you guys are so much fun, seriously.
Hopefully we don't offend anybody who is on the show, because we do love the show and we know we kind of make fun of it sometimes, but
I think you have to. I think it's that kind of show, man. You guys nailed it. And your artist is amazing. His stuff is really fun. Seriously.
He is awesome. Good. He's definitely the best Adam in this podcast. While on the subject, we'd like to give a shout out to him. He's our friend and collaborator, Adam Lauritsen, who's been doing the amazing Walkerstrations on our social media. Be sure to check out his other art on Instagram at AdImaginationRunAmok. When we come back, we'll get Mignon's thoughts on the upcoming CW reboot, browse some epic Walker Texas Ranger pics, and quite possibly discuss Walker's legendary jetpack. Don't fly away. Oh, hey there. You caught me in hot pursuit of some standard-issue flannel-wearing bad guys. Oops, just biffed a mailbox. We here at Roundhouse Roulette have pledged to deliver the Light of Walker, Texas Ranger, to the world. If you'd like to lend us a hand in that mission, please share the pod with a friend or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It truly goes a long way in helping other Walkerites find the cast. Likewise, if you'd like to impress your friends with your utter coolness, we've recently added some fresh new merch at our website, roundhouseroulette.com. And you never know what shenanigans are going down on our Patreon page. Most importantly, though, thank you for listening and making this ridiculous journey of ours worthwhile. We truly have nothing better to do. Oh, no. One of them is half his body hanging out of the passenger side window. What? And he just pulled out the Uzi. Better get going, guys. I'll let you get back to the show.
Well, what if I pull up some pics from the Instagram here and maybe you can give us some insight?
Oh, dude, awesome.
For anybody listening along at home here, go to Walker TX Ranger Pics on Instagram, and we're going to be digging into some of the photos here. So you are here, I guess, looking at, is that playback?
Yeah, so that's Chuck. Of course, that's his brother, Aaron, with the green billed hat. And then that's me looking busy, right? Because I look really busy.
You were taking notes and you're like, yeah, Chuck likes this take.
Just write it down. Whatever he says, write it down. It'll be good. They'll suss it out later.
Okay.
Talk to the tailor and take Chuck Norris's jacket in a few sizes.
Is that jacket not awesome? Like, seriously, yeah, it's like a blanket.
it might blow away in a stiff breeze.
Yeah. The two men behind me, on the left, that's Mike Wilkes. He was one of the special effects guys. And then the guy with the burgundy shirt on and the hat, that's Don Broughton. And he was the boom guy. Like, that guy has...
really long arms.
He has really long arms. And he has a story for absolutely every word you can say to him.
This next one, we're looking at a page from one of your sacred texts.
That's right. And so you can see there's three cameras. We shot with three cameras, like almost all the time. So three lines means three cameras. Anything with a squiggle was off screen. So that was not seen.
Okay.
So just by looking at it, you can tell scene nine tied on the briefcase, that was only in one take. Three cameras, but they saw it on all three of those cameras just the one time. We didn't even go back and get another insert on it.
I love how in that last one, there's a written in note of Walker shooting out the light.
It's like, dude, you gotta know where to put that.
So like they just decide just up his marksmanship a little bit more.
We gotta fade to black somehow and he's gonna shoot out the light, okay? That's just how it's gonna happen.
Somebody needs to be a good shot in this show.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. So here's another page from Blood Diamonds.
It goes to show how much stuff actually gets done on second unit that I actually never saw. They go out and they shot all of those scenes. And then first unit, of course, we shot Walker in the Ferrari. That only makes sense. Wouldn't you? So we shot the hero shots on first unit. We shot him in the driver's seat. We shot him driving the car. We shot probably some cars around him that we saw whatever action they were going through. And then the whole rest was sent to second unit. And then I will have Paige and then all of her notes that she took during that time.
Okay. And then you piece them all together and you're up till midnight in the editing booth, right? Telling them what's going on.
I was never in the editing. Seriously, it was just my notes and they got sent off to LA. And then if they had questions, and of course I had my notes that I could pull through and see what was going on or what they were missing.
How often did you have to fax over a script?
I mean, we sent them notes every day. So at the end of the day, I would make copies and then those notes would get faxed over to the guys in LA because we were shooting on film. So the film still had to be processed, the film still had to be put on reels, and the film still had to get out to L.A.
So they did all the editing and all that stuff was done in L.A.
Yeah.
But production is pretty much a Fort Worth area.
Yeah, Dallas and Fort Worth, yeah.
So this is you on set.
That's me on an insert car. Video Village, to be quite specific, because you see the videos, right? So you can tell I'm really doing my job well. I'm taking it seriously.
Yeah, you are smiling, so it looks like you're having a little too much fun.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun.
Wow, this is like a guy that's supposed to be Walker, right? If he's in black, that's got to be Walker.
So I think that was Walker, right? It'd be Kinney for sure.
So his stunt double, yeah.
Jim Helms, I'm friends with him on Facebook, and so he shares his pictures, and I always ask, but he lets me put them up on my page most kindly, because I was always writing stuff down as all this action was happening, and we didn't have digital cameras back then. So he shares a lot of his pictures, which I'm really grateful for, because he got some really great action pictures that are really super fun.
This one is pretty intense. It looks like Walker rappelling off a helicopter onto a rooftop.
Yeah.
Oh, is this one the one where the plane goes down?
It's obviously a Western piece, right? So that's Kenny Gibson dressed up as Hayes Cooper, right? Firing at the plane as it's coming down the runway towards him. And it's great. You shoot that on a long lens and it makes it look like space is really compressed.
Now, if this was a period piece, though, how come there's a plane in it? If this is a Hayes Cooper episode, is he hallucinating?
You know, there's a lot of liberalness to sort of the history. Like, he really liked his Indian and Western heritage. So whenever we could get to a good, not necessarily like Western, but even like a 40s or 50s, like he was like pretty happy.
This looks more like you're actually doing work.
Yeah, I look pretty serious right there. That would be me working really hard. That's one of the first ADs. She went on to become a production manager, Ellen Bloom. Super smart. But yeah, we were out in Santa Fe.
And you got your bound script so you can take notes there.
Yeah.
As Walker dispenses some Wild West justice.
I reused the same black notebook on like seasons. They would have stickers and stamps and like you'd find the props guy would be doing a flammable truck. I'd get a flammable sticker and put it on the inside to keep my binder all together. But yeah, that's...
to keep it together.
But that was the script. I was the one that carried the whole script. I never put that book down.
How many times did people steal the script? Like rabid Walker fans breaking onto set and you'd have to guard that script?
I never put it down. Okay. Seriously. I mean, I never put that book down. And we had really good security. I always had this joke that I felt like I was working in a fishbowl because people were always watching us. And I was stupid. I was like, it's not that exciting. It's like, it is. It is exciting.
Yeah. So there was always people watching, but people were fearful of roundhouse kicks. So they're not going to get too close.
I was pretty tough. I think anybody knew I would kick their ass if they touched that book.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Michael Priest, the director on this episode also, he said that his book got stolen all the time because he was on Mutiny on the Bounty. He worked on Gilligan's Island. He was one of the extras. You could see him. He's like one of the natives.
Oh, wow. That, yeah. One of the white natives. Yeah.
One of the natives that look like a boxer.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, here's another action shot. This looks like a vehicular transference in action. Helicopter to biplane.
I don't think that guy actually ever jumped off. I think he was just firing, but that's incredible. And like, even looking at like the camera operators, they just had a strap on around their waist. Like they're just, and I know they got hazard pay and like whatever, but these guys just have on a small strap. Like,
yeah, that's crazy.
This is another testament to Walker, Texas Ranger. These stunts were actually done. Like this is when you had to actually do the stunts or you didn't get anything like this on camera at all. Nowadays, they throw in a lot of CGI. This stuff would all be green screen now. So it's amazing. There were actual stunt people doing this stuff. And they had to film it too, like you were just saying.
It's an amazing show in that they're all practical stunts. They're all done by real people. You just put up a bunch of cameras and you just really try to capture it because you're like, I don't know if we're going to be able to do this again, right?
And I think this episode, if I remember correctly, that's Walker on the edge of the plane. And he slows the other plane down at gunpoint from the helicopter. So I think you're right. I don't think he actually jumps onto the plane, which you're waiting for because that seems like something he would do.
Well, but why would you not?
Where did you guys film the Old West stuff?
We were all around Santa Fe and then Park City for another set of some of those. So, yeah.
That's a cool panorama.
I love the Western, that three shot, because like you see some of the producers in the back,
yeah,
you know, but like it's just so dynamic. That set has burned down, but that was an amazing set. It was humongous.
Is that like something that you guys made or was like an existing like Old West shanty town?
It was right outside of Santa Fe and it was like six blocks. It was like two lanes of main streets with crisscrosses. And then there's a church that's on back. It was an amazing set.
So you guys felt like you were back in time?
Totally. And of course, we're using locals and we're using Civil War reenactors that come with their own costumes. Some of these guys were amazing. Like they just brought their A game.
That's awesome. Yeah, we haven't gotten to any of Ranger Hayes Cooper, his ancestor or something like that, right?
Yeah, that was supposed to be an ancestor.
They go back in time and then they have the same cast portray different characters in the Old West. So that was always an awesome novelty too.
Yeah, and there's an Old West town that was even in Dallas. So we shot mostly Mexican sort of areas that we would shoot there. But like we shot all around Dallas. There was that Mexican village there in Dallas. There was a place, Dallas Hunting and Fishing Club. That's where all the kids went out to the camp and they were all in those shacks and stuff that CD was sweeping out, right?
Yeah.
That was Dallas Hunting and Fishing Club. We were out there one time and a tornado came through and we were all just like basically laying on the ground
because
it's Texas and those storms came through so fast.
Wow. And so the Ranger teen camp almost got wiped out by a tornado is what you're saying.
Pretty much. Yeah. Well, we had like a whole cabin down there that we were going to go shoot some scenes in. It was moved like 10 feet. We couldn't even shoot in it.
Do you have any memories of Terry Kaiser?
I heard you guys talk about that. I was like, that can't be true. Am I just that dense? So I went back and looked. I was like, oh my God. Yeah. And that's him. Like Walker came to the courthouse and picked him up. Like, why would he do that? I don't know.
I mean, he was very vigilant. I mean, he might've been on his lunch break and just happened to be like, hey, let's see what's happening at the courthouse today.
You know, sometimes you just have that soft place in your heart for the guy that's just like, You know, he's probably voted for the president that you didn't really want him to vote for, but like he's pretty adamant about that. It's not that he's a bad guy, right? Like he's there for you and you're like, oh, dude, bud, come on. When you call him, oh, bud.
I think throughout the seasons, Walker has a few buds.
Oh, yeah. But they're just buddy buds. That's it. They're not like buds.
Yeah. Do you remember him using his jetpack?
Oh, the jetpack was awesome. Once again, that was like Kenny Gibson. And Kenny Gibson was like one of the guys that invented that. And he took the jetpack. I know, I get all excited. And he took and he put the jetpack on and he went up over. We were shooting at some school, right? Yeah. And so here we are outside the school with all these little kids like running around. And then, like, has on his jetpack. It's like, the world just like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like he has, like, handles for it.
Handles,
with,
yeah.
With, like, tinfoil wrapped around it, right?
Okay, so look, it might have been a little homemade. Like, but don't be a hater. Like, that's really cool. Like, he has some good tape on there. Like, I mean, I'm talking, that was good tape.
It was good. The first time I saw that, I was in college, and we had to get to class, and Walker was on. And of course, all the good stuff happens at the end of the episode. And Walker's like, I don't know how I'm going to get in there. And then he finds like this weird inventor guy who kind of reminds you of like Back to the Future Doc kind of situation going on. And oh, you're like, oh, he has an old friend who looks like Doc Brown. And he has a jetpack.
Yeah.
And he's going to use it when no one else has used it before and scale a building. And I've got to go to class right now.
Skip the class.
I tell you, I didn't skip the class, and I've been kicking myself for years until I finally saw the end of that. But it was majestic to see him actually go up onto that building. It looked like he was on like a zip line kind of thing up onto the top of the school. It must have been, right?
Did that not look awesome?
It was awesome. It was amazing.
So, not to make you guys jealous.
Yeah, that was epic. But yeah, I mean, not to knock the construction, but it looked like there was a little tinfoil action going on there, which to his credit, I mean, Doc Brown probably used tinfoil on the DeLorean, so.
Maybe they had better tape.
Yeah.
It was a prototype, so.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, yeah. Beggars can't be choosers, and Walker did luck out. It did work when he used it, so.
Thank God.
Well, what are you working on now these days? You said you had some top secret projects. You're trying to unfreeze Han Solo.
Yeah, we just created a bunch of stuff and we're just out pitching it now. Like, I did my first pitch to Canadian broadcast. That was pretty awesome. Like, they didn't pick up our show, but that was the first time I've ever been in a pitch with these really important Canadian people. We're part of Canadian broadcast. We just really want to see what you have to offer. And I'm like, but no, my husband's very creative and that's all he's done is just create stuff. And so I'm grateful that I get to be a part of that. To see a process of a project that like you come up with 10 years ago and rewrite it a couple times and you throw it out there. People are always like, well, change this, change that. And you do that. You're like, oh, we'll put this person in or here, you can go talk to these people. And like, and then all of a sudden, it's just like, hey, well, we saw this project. Do you want to do anything with it? And we're like, oh, yeah.
Awesome. So did you guys pitch via Zoom as well?
We do. So like my husband, the last 10 years, like we've been in Vancouver and in Montreal. He directed a couple of little projects. And then we fortunately got to do some projects with the Fingerlings and with My Little Pony. And yeah. Just really fun, kid, lighthearted stuff. And then we're in with some Indigenous people that we're working with some really powerful projects that are meaningful for the planet and for the world, which is an amazing thing just to be able to see and go like, I can't be a part of that. But thank you for letting me see the process and being a fly on the wall so that I can see this is important stuff.
Just a bunch of different projects in the fire.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, Evan's a naturalist. or nudist. Or which one is it, Evan?
More of the former, I guess.
Okay, yeah, naturalist, yeah. But, I mean, we all care about the planet. We want this planet to be around.
Totally. The Indigenous Project is really amazing, and it's Water Walkers. It's through Seeing Red. I should actually know more about it so I can properly support it. But
what region are they Indigenous to?
Mostly Seeing Red is Six Nations, which is up in Ontario, Toronto area, like up there. So it's a big group of people that have not had any place to have their word said. And so it's really great to be able to see those projects come through.
For sure.
I know that they were showing it in Canada for a while. I don't know if you can see it here yet, but Water Walker is great. And then one of the guys that were with Stevie Salas, he's a musician, right? He did Rumble, which has gone through several of the film festivals. Once again, it's about Indigenous music and just the voice that people have. Like, it's interesting.
Awesome. We'll have to check those out for sure.
Rumble.
Before we wrap things up here, where can folks find you online?
You can find me at Walker TexPics. That is TexPics, of course.
And you creep on there pretty often?
I do try. Of course, it's the holidays. Like what? We had so many family and friends over. Like, didn't you guys? Traveling and just like going everywhere, like grandma's house. Wasn't that awesome?
Right.
Like,
there were people great. Walking up and down the road. We just invited a man.
I know. I did. Well, we did too. Like, we were basically on, we're like, yeah, come on up.
You're like, we got a keg in here.
Yeah, we have a keg. Like, what the fuck? Come have a drink. Come on.
The more the merrier. You guys are acting out Walker scripts.
Oh, you know what? How fun would that be?
That'd be very fun. I will say I was pretty impressed by the flowery language and descriptions used in the draft that Bob sent me. I thought it was great. I think a dramatic reading of those would play out pretty nicely.
Yeah.
Maybe if we get bigger, we can get Patrick Stewart to do it. That would be the end game.
Oh, just a really good table read, right? Just, come on. Maybe we could get Judson in here and maybe Sheree. Like, you guys, you know, you could play Chuck. You could be Trivette.
Yeah,
I think definitely we need to get Patrick Stewart to read Chuck's lines.
That'd be so awesome.
So good.
Well, yeah, thank you so much for hanging out with us for this cast. We'll have to check back with you once we dig into a few more episodes for sure, if you're down.
I am totally down. And look, if I get to come back, I might even actually talk to some people, like a writer or something, and really have some real solid information.
That's more than we ever offer. So.
Yeah, I mean, all we ask is you do your homework, and a little disappointed, but, you know.
You know, I'm not a role model. do we need to go over this again? That was a touchstone, right?
Sure. So, yes, for anyone listening at home, don't do this at home, okay?
Not a role model. Don't do what I've done.
You may not be as lucky to survive years on a Walker, Texas Ranger set, relatively unscathed.
Relatively. I'm just hoping I offended somebody. I just need a little bit of, like, you know, oh my God, I can't believe you said that. Like, that would just bring me joy. Like, I just, like, I want that.
All right. So we got to start some rumors here. You got to give us some Walker rumors some that you can start. Rumors. Like, so Judson Mills, give us the dirt.
Judson Mills, you know what? He was such a puppy dog. He's like having a Labrador Retriever on this set that just wants to play fetch all day. You're like, you're so adorable. But we're all over here, man. Come on.
Just, yeah. that was kind of a compliment and a diss. So that was good. I think he kind of walked the line there. He seems like a nice guy.
He's totally amazing. He's come so far from where he was. He was so young. He was shoved into this major set, and now he's gone off and he's done like theater and Broadway, and like, he's a solid human being. Like, I'm proud to know that he's out there.
That's quite a transition. That's like from craft service to script supervisor, you know.
Well, look, a lot of people really moved up. And like, what was it? The Sons of Thunder guys, like, they started out like that Trent Malloy and like whatever, they started out on Walker, and then they were there for like a hot second, and then
they're like, oh man, we need a spinoff ASAP, Sons of Thunder, here we go.
Yeah,
I still haven't seen that, but we'll have to get there eventually. But yeah, you worked on the Sons of Thunder episode, which I guess was the backdoor pilot.
Yeah, that's where they all came in, and I think they were always sort of planning on doing the spinoff, but it just wasn't strong enough. Like, without Chuck, like, really, what is it? Like, you just don't.
Right.
And even the show suffered if Chuck would, like, write himself out of it. Like, The show would really suffer.
Even Eric was talking to Chuck about that in that interview. He's like, you kind of wrote yourself out of this one.
Yeah. And he did that a lot. Like, God bless him. Like, he worked hard.
Yeah.
That's hard to show up like at that level.
And I think at the same time when he does that, it almost is like when he's trying to stick to a more moralistic episode. He's like, I don't need to be in this if we're trying to tell a moralistic tale, you know?
I think it's a mindset for him. He was like, where's my place in this script? And either I'm here to get the bad guy or I'm here to really show a point.
Mm. Well, so Walker, Texas Ranger without Chuck Norris is just absolutely, you know, it falls apart. Like, that's why Sons of Thunder lasted.
What was it? 6 episodes, maybe? Like, I don't even know if they showed all the episodes they'd shot. Like,
and they aren't even available to really buy or stream anywhere. It's kind of like it was wiped off the map.
So sad.
So what are your thoughts on old Jared Padalecki? Let's hear it.
You know, I tell you what, I love a good intellectual property that pays off. You can do sock puppets, right? As TMNT, and it's amazing because you buy into it. You know who those characters are, and they all stand strong. Now, this can totally be the same way. All these people are truly iconic. But Walker, Texas Ranger is a sock puppet, and he's going to kick the shit out of somebody.
Right?
Like, it's going to be a roundhouse pinky. I don't know. But that's the thing about really good IPs, and I do think that Walker is a really strong property. It can stand. Like, it has history to it. Right. It has strong characters. And you know it's going to be a good fight. You know it's going to be a good car chase. And if they just respect that, I think it's going to be fine.
There's some outlandishness to Walker, Texas Ranger. So if they get that mix right, then I'm all for it.
Yeah, I agree. Crazy enough, although it's shot in Austin and not Dallas, a lot of the original crew are now on the new Walker.
Oh, really? That's awesome.
Full circle. And of course, like, how many actors do you have? Like, we totally used and abused all the extras. Like, we were trying to bring in people from Chicago just to see a different face, right? It's just like...
Because we definitely see a repeat in the actor pool in Walker, Texas Ranger. Like, you wouldn't see on a show today because nowadays shows all have to kind of link together. So they wouldn't reuse an actor. But back then, as they were standalone episodes, I mean, we've seen guys that have been on like 6 to 8 episodes as like a different person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see some of those same actors maybe pop up in the reboot of Walker.
What Chuck said in one of his interviews was like, each show is a mini movie. Like, you go from the beginning and the middle to the end and it wraps up. Each show is complete.
And that's the beauty about it. And one of the reasons we're able to just hit the roulette wheel and see what episode pops up. Whereas if it was a continuous story, we wouldn't have a gimmick and then we wouldn't have a podcast. And then I wouldn't know what to do with myself.
You guys are the best. You guys made me laugh. I swear to God, I'd just be sitting here with my headphones on and laughing. And my husband would be like, what the fuck? I'd be like, they're so funny. I'm like,
oh no. Well, thank you so much for listening and hanging.
You guys are great. And like I said, like, who wants to listen to my old stories? You guys.
We're the target demographic for sure.
We might not have found our audience, but you found yours.
I love that. Right.
Well, we can't thank you enough for joining us. We hope you listeners out there enjoyed this as much as we did. As always, don't forget to troll us on social media or by emailing us at roundhouseroulette@gmail.com and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your fine podcasts. We hope you'll join us next time when we return to our normal format, recapping and reviewing another action-packed episode of Walker, Texas Ranger. Thanks so much for listening. Mignon, can you take us out?
Well, you know how we ended each day on the set?
No.
That's a wrap.
Okay.
That's a wrap.
May the eyes of the ranger be upon you.
When your Texas look behind you,
where the ranger's gonna be.